Tonight, we take a critical look at in-custody deaths and why my guests say the issue is a public health emergency. My guests are Dr. Roger Mitchell, chair of pathology at the Howard University College of Medicine and author of the book Death in Custody, How America Ignores the Truth and What We Can Do About It. Professor Justin Hansford, executive director of the Thurgood Marshall Civil Rights Center. And on the phone, Selwyn Jones, co-founder of the Hope 929 Foundation. Mr. Jones is also the uncle of George Floyd. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can also chime in online using the hashtag InCustodyDeath. Thank you all so much for joining in this really important conversation. Let me first start with you, Dr. Mitchell. Can you kind of give me a working definition of what in-custody deaths means?
Yeah, you know, good evening and to the viewers and listeners. In-custody death, they range in a spectrum. They start in a pre-arrest phase where law enforcement may be running after an individual or chasing an individual, and then it goes into the arrest phase when they put their hands on you. And then from the arrest phase, you can go into booking and transport and booking, and then jail and incarceration, and then there's a post-custody phase too. So death in custody can occur across that continuum. Before law enforcement actually puts their hands on you, they're chasing you, or they may be shooting after you, and then all the way to deaths that occur during incarceration in jail. And they can span all the five manners of death: homicide, suicide, accident, naturals, and undetermined. So that's the definition that's in the Deaths in Custody Reporting Act, which is the federal legislation that requires reporting. And that's also the definition that's here in the Washington, D.C.
Why do you call this a public health emergency?
Well, it's a public health emergency because we don't know how many people are dying in and around the criminal legal system. We don't know the impact that the criminal legal system has on the health outcomes of a people. Today, we don't know how many people are dying, like a George Floyd or like a LaShawn Thompson that died on the floor of a Fulton County jail. Mm-hmm. We only know if it makes the news. And so it's a public health emergency because we know that 5.4 million of U.S. citizens are in the carceral system. 3.7 of them are in probation and parole. 1.2 million of them are in prisons, and about 636,000 of them are in jail. And so we know that they're under the control of our criminal legal system, but we don't know whether or not they're dying from the diseases or injuries that may be associated with them. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes a public health emergency.
Mr. Jones, thank you so much for joining this conversation. As we said in the beginning of this, you are the uncle of George Floyd, and obviously his killing really struck a chord, not just with the nation, but around the world. As you know, this awful story continues to reverberate. Since your nephew's, you know, tragic death, there have been so many other stories about in-custody deaths. What are your thoughts about that? Mr. Jones, can you hear me? Mr. Jones, we'll try to pick up your call. Professor Hansford, as you know, Dr. Mitchell was just talking about, you know, this working definition of deaths in custody. You know, not all of these deaths make the headlines. Mm-hmm. So, you know, why is it that they don't, and why is it that no one is really talking about it unless it's really high profile?
That's a great question. I think that when you talk about the interaction between Black people and the police in the United States, there's a long history of tension. There's a long history of violence. And unfortunately, it's almost become a norm in our society for there to be these interactions. And it's easy to rely on the same old narratives of the problem being the black, oftentimes it's gendered, right? So problem being the black male. Is he a thug? Was he doing something that he wasn't supposed to be doing? Was he a criminal? And when we get our news mediated through mainstream media that has an easy time relying on these same racial tropes, it's difficult for us to be able to mobilize around the interaction in the same way, because so you can easily say that the person was no angel, which is what they said in the case of Mike Brown. Now, we've seen in the last 9 years, you could even say 10 years since the killing of Trayvon Martin, efforts to push back against that narrative so that we don't rush to always take the police description of what happened as gospel. We saw that also happen in the George Floyd case, where the description that the police put out was contradicted ultimately by the video footage, which changed the way that we understood the killing of and the murder of George Floyd. So the rise in technology has started to change that.
Well, that's what I was about to ask, yep. Because I think that, first of all, there was no video of the killing of Michael Brown. Right. But, you know, were it not for the young lady who was standing on the sidewalk with others during the killing of George Floyd, and obviously, even though he was not killed, I mean, this goes all the way back to Rodney King. Mm-hmm. If there had been no video, this, air quotes, did not happen. And I think that probably contributes a lot to this.
No, absolutely. And you know, I'm a forensic pathologist, and I've been studying death in custody for now nearly 25 years and performing the autopsies on individuals that have died at the hands of law enforcement during that time period. And the reality is that I've seen things change as or are changing now with the advent of body-worn camera, surveillance video, and cell phone video. It allows for a third-person objective appearance of that interaction with law enforcement. And, you know, this, you know, we talk about the history in this country. This goes all the way back to lynching. You know, in the first chapter of the book, we dedicate that chapter to Ida B. Wells and the work that she did in recording as a journalist individuals that were dying at the hands of extrajudicial killings and law enforcement complicit, coroner complicit in covering up these deaths. And it wasn't until she started bringing them forward that the nation's thoughts started changing around lynching. We're in a very similar situation at the turn of the century. That was in the 1920s. Now we're in the 2020s when we're starting to get visibility on deaths that are occurring at the hands of law enforcement. And it's important to note that it's not just the homicides. Those are going to be much fewer, very important, but those are much fewer than the natural deaths that are occurring in our jails because the individuals aren't getting proper care within our jails. And those are also going unnoticed, unreported, and even further from the mind's eye of the American public.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This is the 9th anniversary of the death of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, and we are taking a closer look at in-custody deaths. If you have a comment or question, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Zero. Mr. Jones, as I was asking before, there have been many cases since the death of your nephew, George Floyd. It seems, or one probably would have thought that after his death, after his killing, yeah, that somebody, that this would stop or there would be a change, but there hasn't really been much of a change. Your thoughts about what has happened since the death of your nephew?
First of all, I would like to thank y'all for having me up here, and I'm sorry my phone was muted.
That's quite all right. Things happen, but please go right ahead.
I tell people every time I speak, every time I show up at an event, I'm here because somebody got murdered. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to continue to be here until people stop getting murdered. before my nephew died, there's 130 more people that died the 3 years after him than before him. So this hasn't slowed down. You know, empathy works on a lot of emotions with people, and I just think undertrained, non-caring, overbearing, controlled-filled people take advantage of people in bad situations. So it's horrendous. That's the reason why we created Hope 929, is to make a difference in people's lives, and to make a difference, and again, in police brutality. Because I was going through some video the other night, and I just happened to come across Derek Chauvin's body cam video, and it sparked another set of emotions in my heart that it's just breathtaking that a man can be told what to do and to do everything that he was told to do, and they take his life because of power and control. And thank God for Darnella Frazier, because without Darnella Frazier, there wouldn't be a George Floyd. We wouldn't be having this conversation. And I know of at least 5 cases that I have had on my desk of people being in custody and their lives ended, and it's always an excuse. It's always their problem, the family's problem. It's never their problem of somebody not caring and taking advantage of a situation where somebody cannot fight back. And it's horrific. And unfortunately, we are in the 1920s, it seems like, because lynchings are not, they're not hanging people from trees anymore. They're putting their knees on their neck. They're shooting them in the back as they run away. They're taking advantage of mental health issues with people. So, man, you know, y'all are the experts. I'm just a guy that has my feet on the ground that has gone to way too many funerals in the last 3 years. And the only problem we have is it's one set of rules for one section of people in this world, and it's a different set of rules for everybody else.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about in-custody death during this special edition of The Daily Drum on WHUR and on WHUT-TV YouTube. You can watch it now if you choose to. Let me go to the phone lines. Let's go to Ken calling from D.C. Ken, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it, as always. And as a member of law enforcement for over 31 years, but as a black man for 52 years, I see the inherent causes and issues with law enforcement. But unfortunately, I don't declare it a national public health emergency like I do that my nephew's son was just murdered in Philadelphia at 16 years old. And he was the youth that did it are still on the run. We've lost over 354 victims have been killed by gunfire just in Chicago alone. So not to change the subject matter, but the nature of the public health emergency is that there's something happened, particularly to black people. And so as we increase laws to hold police accountable, we still have to do something else. We still have to have a certain amount of focus to reach us, in particular these young black men and young black women. But as far as police are concerned, like Chauvin, he should be executed. He should be, and the punishment should fit the crime. But again, I think, and what happens is when we start to pick policies or parties, that what happens is the party that finally answers us just only wants to support that portion of what we ask for. Because in the black community, we're asking for more than just police reform. We're asking for reform with our schools, with our businesses, with access. So we're asking for a lot, not just one. But I think the thing is, when we go in, we have to always set demands. We should not allow them to decide what our barometer is. So going forward, and I tell young black men in particular that I mentor and I take to HBCUs throughout the South, hey, I need you to get to tomorrow.
But Ken, let me ask you this real quick, because you said we need to get the message to young black men and young black women. Briefly, what is that message? Are you talking about the talk in dealing with law enforcement? Because I'm talking specifically about as it relates to in custody death, because we can talk more broadly, and we have on this program many, many times about gun violence, but specifically as it relates to in custody death and interaction with police, what is that message?
So real quick, when I pull someone over, especially young black males, I talk to them and I give them information about how to eliminate or alleviate the stress level. Turn on the inside of the lights, know where your license is, know where your insurance card is, you know, do everything right to get home, roll all your windows down, don't make yourself, and if you do consider that you're being a threat, always record it. Always use your camera, because that is vital information. And every child has a phone nowadays, mm-hmm. every young person. Record and let them know you're recording them. Don't hide the fact that you aren't. Don't try to put it on TikTok. Utilize it as information. That is information that needs to be held on to. So we need to really talk to our youth, but we have to hold them accountable.
Okay.
At some point, enough is enough. But God bless you and all the work that you do. All right. Keep it up.
Thank you so much, Ken. Real quick, Doc, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, real quick, and I'm glad that you brought him back to death in custody, because often when we talk about how our community has been brutalized by law enforcement or the criminal legal system, there's a conflation on the violence that's happening in our community. And that changes the narrative. It's this another way of blaming a community for its victimization. And so just as I'm a violence preventionist and on the board of, you know, Peace for DC, I'm also the forensic pathologist for Colin Kaepernick's Know Your Rights, where we do second autopsies for individuals who have died in and around the criminal legal system. So it's a both and, not an either or. And the one thing that I'll point out is the reason why we know the statistics of individuals that are dying from violent crime is because we capture those statistics. We do not capture the statistics on how many people are dying associated with the criminal legal system. That federal registry does not exist, and that's what we're trying to point out.
Real quick, in these last few minutes before the break, Mr. Jones, I'll let you have a final word, but quickly tell us about the medical civil rights bill that you are advocating for.
The Medical Civil Rights Bill is pretty much a bill designed to preserve life. Once you come in contact with the police officer, whether you're strolling through the park or whether he has got you in custody, you have a right to seek medical attention. My nephew would be living. Eric Gardner, Tyrese Nichols. There's a plethora of people that would still be alive on this earth if the Medical Civil Rights Bill was passed. And that's a bill that we're pushing for 100%. And all I would love to say is, young people, keep your hearts and your minds in the right place. Don't go too fast, because life is short. And you can speed it up or slow it down. So, you know, make great decisions and love yourself. Just love yourself, because love is at a loss at this particular time. So, you know, we have a podcast, Setting It Straight with Selwyn, which is based out of Washington, D.C., that we bring people on all the time to talk about these matters. So, you know, God bless you and thank you. And Docs, I appreciate you letting me join you on this conversation.
Selwyn Jones, thank you so much for participating in this important discussion, and keep up the work that you've been doing. We are going to take a break, but don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com, or you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. Stay with us. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141 and WHUT TV, YouTube, and 96.3 HD2. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We'll be back on Sirius XM in just a few minutes.